are fortunate to actually have in the studio one of the members of Orbital Decay. Tyree Ferber is the synthesist, the electronic musician in Orbital Decay. The other member is Scott Watkins, plays guitar. Welcome back to Star's End, Terry.
Well, thanks for having me on, Chuck. I really appreciate it. And it's a great show you have here. One of the few artists can actually say that probably wouldn't be playing this music if it wasn't for XPN and Star's End in particular. We actually have a real passion for this kind of music. It's interesting music. It's fun. It has to do with jazz a little bit because there's a lot of improvisation in this type of music. Yeah. And really interesting for the artist as well as the listener to play this type of music. Well, I had a Moog that I had got in 1974. I got my first mini Moog, and thanks to my parents, they helped.
They were a lot of money
support
back then.
That. Yeah, it was quite a bit of money back then. And I, in high school, I met a lot of people. I was the kid with the mini Moog, so that's how I met a lot of these people. And I met Scott Watkins and the different people from the area, Glenside.
But how did you go about making the transition between like a jam band and a actual performing duo?
Like you said, put together a live set that would work live, that we could reassemble, and that took a lot of thought. You didn't have, like you said, have something that was too large or too big to bring out, and a lot of things happened. I built a modular system that, I knew this kind of music, you had to have that analog modular in there, and it's tough to put my finger on it, exactly how that all happened. It was just a driving force that Scott and I always wanted to do. We always wanted to be able to do this, kind of something we thought we missed back in the 70s, that we weren't able to do it. And it's tough to say, Chuck, when and how exactly. I know preparing for the concert, we actually had to write stuff out. We didn't even know how to write this music out, so we were writing it out with, like, times on it, like, okay, at 15 minutes, we're going to do this part, and then 10 minutes after that, we were, like, looking at the clock. Okay, it's 2:30 now we can go to this part. And
right, yeah, that is a good way. That's a good point you bring up, because you can't really, it's hard to notate this kind of music. And
I think we brought you notation on the first one. It was, like, scribbles on the piece of paper. Yeah. There were just, like, waves and different little drawings and hieroglyphics on it.
Yeah, you do have to come up with your own method of notes, and it's over the years I've met different musicians, and they all have different tactics for doing that. But I'm bringing up you brought up about your modular system, and for people in the audience who listen to this music, I think there's a great mystery surrounding how this music gets made, and it's rightly so, because so many different people make electronic and space music, and everybody has a completely different approach to it, but the approach for Orbital Decay is the centerpiece of your equipment is this thing called a modular synthesizer, that's sort of a throwback to the early days of electronic music, and it's something that that Tyree Ferber has actually built, and it's really a big device. It's kind of hard to move around, and it's thought by many to be a studio device, but why don't you talk about, like, the aspects of bringing this big piece of studio equipment out into the live environment. It's not only impressive for people to look at, but I think you do some performances that cannot be accomplished on any other kind of gear due to this nature of this piece of equipment that you use.
Well, it's an interesting instrument in that you really have to listen to a modular as you play it. You can't just, there's no preset. You can't push a button and such a sound comes up as some of the modern keyboards do. So it really requires you have to listen to it. And that's an interesting part of the whole, how you make a sound with it, is you have to, and all the patches are made with these patch cords, the actual little, jacks that you plug a cord into to make the connections. I usually make a pre-connection before a show, a certain patch. But it's a very live instrument. It's real easy. And a lot of the sounds you come up with, you're not going to come up with again. So you have to record it live, and hopefully it's a good one when you do it. We've had a couple that we did on the air that were good. They were great. It was awesome to have it work that way. And then there was other times when it went out of tune on us, and it wasn't so awesome. It's fun. It's live, and it's flying by the seat of your pants a lot of times.
Yeah, I guess there's an immediacy to the live performance, and especially for you, because you really don't have anything to fall back on. There's nothing pre-recorded, and you sort of are, as you said, you're listening very closely to the way your instrument is sounding and building these sounds based around that, which is different than many of approaches of people who use software or synthesizers with presets and stuff like that. there's always something there, but you have to make your sounds from scratch with this modular.
Right, well, that's probably the most fun part about this kind of music. There's no right way or wrong way to play it, that everybody has their own way. And there was never really a book written on how to play a synthesizer. Everybody can have their own approach, and ours is, yeah, the old school approach. We're using old analogs, and it's hard to describe just to tell people that how it is to use stuff like this. In the old days, I think we cried as musicians. It would be great if I could have a preset sound, go from a flute sound to a bass sound. But I think along the way, we forgot how cool it could be to actually morph from that bass sound to the flute sound. That's where a lot of this analog comes from. You have to actually listen to it and change it as you play it. And it's an interesting sound. I think that's something we missed as musicians back in the 70s, crying, well, I wish I had presets. I wish it did this, and I wish I did that. And now that it does do that, a lot of us are going back and saying, wait a minute, maybe it was better the other way, because it did an interesting thing. I know I played in even rock bands, and people would say, well, that's really neat the way you're playing a bass, and all of a sudden it just turned into a lead, like kind of morphed into a lead, and that's kind of how you work these analogs. You have to work it as you play it. And it's an interesting way to play the music. And I know we did a Back in Time concert here in October, and we did it with all analog gear the first hour, and that changed my life forever, because I forgot about a lot of this analog stuff and how really neat it was to play this kind of stuff. I got kind of stuck in the presets and everything. Oh, I need a flute sound. It's a lot more interesting live in front of an audience to dial up a flute sound. And, you know, you have to have a working knowledge of the instrument, but it's different. I think you can hear it in the music. It's fresh. You can hear that. Hopefully it conveys in our music. Yeah, we don't use too much pre-recorded stuff or MIDI files, and that's part of it.
Moving from the studio to Star's End and then out into the public, was that another quantum leap to actually play in front of a bunch of people and audience?
Yeah, it makes me nervous, Chuck.
I think it does everyone.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, edginess when you go out there and play before a live audience, but it's a lot of fun too. And one of the cool things that we did on our last The Gathering series is we decided we would try and do a video along with what we played, and we actually used the video as the score instead of writing down on a sheet, you know, 10 minutes we're going to go to this. We actually tried to play to the music. So if you watch me and Scott, we were actually watching the video along with everybody else as we were playing, and we thought that was a really neat thing to bring along live. But yeah, there's something about playing live where you can feel from the audience, you get this, I don't know, surge of energy from the people, and like you said, it's almost like the people in the audience are almost like a part of what's going on there, because like you said, there's a certain vibe there that you definitely feed off it when you're up on stage.
Terry, I've always noticed in you a and it's rare, a balance between a love or a passion for technology and for the music and sound as well. Usually you get a guy who's really into music but doesn't know so much about technology, or the other way around. They're like a gearhead and they really can't put together the music all that well. But why don't you talk about, for a minute here, these two influences and how you express them.
Well, I think it probably relates closest to like having a hot rod car, like my Mini Moogs and stuff are like hot rods to me, and it's fun to soup them up. And I got into it at a young age. I think I read a thing about Larry Fast. He said he had a souped up Mini Moog. He felt like a greaser with a 396 Chevelle. I said, oh, that's cool, man. And that's kind of the thing. You have to kind of be a buff about, you know, these old vintage synthesizers. You have to work on them a bit. You have to open up the hood and tune them up and maintain them, and that's part of the fun of playing it. And the other part is, I think that's what got me into the music, was the mechanical sense. I wanted that machine with the keyboard and the knobs on. It's like, that's cool. I want to play that. And I learned how to play music. I think I approached it first from a technical point, and then from there got into the music. And it's been a big thing for me to play the technology there, especially this old school technology that, you know, the analog synthesizer. It's easy to work on. It's kind of like working on an old car. You don't have all that pollution stuff on it, you know, with a computer that you have to plug into, because you can't work on that stuff. So it's easy to hot rod and mod a Mini Moog as opposed to...
It's like hands-on.
Right. It's great hands-on, because I'm the guy that wants to put a pressure sensor in my thing to get my playing more expressive. I find that mechanical, being able to make these little adjustments and customizing the synthesizers, I can get more out of them. So I'm the guy that wants to have a pitch wheel with the pressure sensor, because I push so hard on it when I go to bend a note, and it would... A couple other things like that. I think it relates most to like a car, having an old Corvette or something like that that you would work on and tune it up and then take it out to the track and race it. And that's the fun. I get to build these hot rods and then take them out in front of people and play them. It's a blast.